And welcome back to the SEC on CBS podcast here on CBS Sports. I am your host, Chip Patterson. Dennis Dodd joins me. He is checking in from Gainesville. He's been spending some time with the Florida Gators. We will look ahead to Florida-Arkansas. We will talk Alabama-LSU, as well as a look at the College Football Playoff Selection Committee through a lens and a topic that you probably haven't thought of. Make sure that you subscribe on iTunes, TuneIn, or Stitcher so that you can get the SEC on CBS podcast first and enjoy another Doddcast. Dennis Dodd back here on the SEC on CBS podcast. Dennis joining us from Gainesville, Florida, where he has been writing about styling and profiling with the Florida Gators. The Florida Gators that were 24-10 winners against Georgia and will be a part of our SEC on CBS triple header. The undercard for LSU, Alabama, Florida at Arkansas. Dennis, hello from the road. I hope you are well and everyone is doing swell in Gainesville, I imagine.
They're doing great. They're doing fantastic. They think they can win the East. They now have an inside track, obviously, with Tennessee's loss. So, yeah, no, they're good.
They've got a defense that spoke with Gary Danielson earlier this week. It is a defense that is deep. We are starting to see good recruiting paying off. There are sophomores out there. This is not just a top-level group. It is one of the only groups that can show any kind of depth from the East Division. As they go for this rare cross-division matchup, remember, Florida and Arkansas, since expansion, not going to play that often. The game in Fayetteville, are you hearing anything from the coaches or the players? What are you expecting to see from either Florida or Arkansas in this matchup? And like you mentioned, a game that they need to win. And there's not been anybody from the East that looks like they can go over to the West and win that cross-division game. What makes you believe that the Gators might be the one?
Yeah, they pretty much have to win two out of the three against Arkansas, LSU, and South Carolina. You know, this probably being the swing game, it would help if they won this game. Arkansas is a team that may be a victim of its schedule this year. It's just had a really, really tough schedule. Austin Allen is running for his life. The offensive line is not very good, but they can put up points. I mean, he has gamely stayed in there and thrown and made plays for them. So, but this, you mentioned the Florida defense, number one, I believe, number two in scoring, number two total, number one in pass defense completion percentage, and just really epic. Probably, if you want to talk about Alabama, this is probably the number two defense in the country, and you know, really veteran and fast and runs around and overshadows an offense. We know that,
right?
Which we will talk about, but yeah. They're concerned about Arkansas this week, frankly, right now.
Well, what are your concerns in this Florida offense? Because I'm being sold a bill of goods, like Jordan Scarlett's having a breakout right now, and there is some skepticism as to, you know, exactly how shiny this used car that is a Florida offense is right now. I mean, I don't want to buy this Florida offense and then drive it off the lot and have the transmission fall out, Dennis. What do we have here?
I'll put it this way. Jim McElwain was very excited about the offense running out the clock, running out the last 3:08 Saturday with a 7-play, 23-yard drive. And I'm serious. He was, you know, that
he was excited. Even though it's only 23 yards, he's just excited that they were able to do what they needed to do, which was burn clock.
Control the clock.
Right.
Get it over with, yeah. But no, it is still stultifying at times to watch. Luke Del Rio, bless his heart, cannot really go downfield, which is what they need to do. Talked to Steve Spurrier while I was here, and he said that. I mean, he loves that. He loves doing that. He'd love to be able to take shots, but they can't do that right now for the most part with Luke Del Rio. Now, obviously, Antonio Callaway is a weapon, but other teams can lock down on him. What is he, the 21st player to score punt, kick, pass, run, return, and pass, I think, and pass for a touchdown too. But
in FBS,
in Florida history, I think 21st in history.
Yeah, it's the and the rushing touchdown was the last thing he had. He had a punt return touchdown, a kick return, a passing touchdown, which came in the bowl game against Michigan, maybe. the obviously a touchdown reception, and then the rushing touchdown. Five ways.
Which is the last one is the relatively easy one. It's like right. The cycle. Oh, you only need a single? Okay. Well, it will be tough. They're going to have to hold Arkansas down there because they have to come from behind. It's going to be tough because they're getting better. I made the point that, they're up near 400 yards in total offense. They're about 60 yards per game better than last year, about 6 points per game better than last year. So incremental progress, and they will get better as time goes on. Jim McElwain is an offensive guy. They've got great depth at quarterback, and he's recruited, players are coming here because they want to be here. So, and Martez Ivey was the SEC Big 12, I believe, offensive player of the week. So that tells you something about Florida after a great win over Georgia. One of their offensive linemen is player of the week.
I think that you look at Florida and in particular some of the youth movement beneath the surface, and you realize that there is a chance for this massive discrepancy before the SEC East, between the SEC East and the SEC West. Something that you've mentioned before on this podcast really stems back to the SEC championship game. Just the fact that it's been so long since a team from the East has won in Atlanta, that goes into the psychological disadvantage. Yeah. This Florida team looking like it's going to get back for a second year to be the slaughter for Alabama. But I would not be surprised, Dennis, and you're right there. That's why I want to ask you. I look around and I think, but they might be back to Atlanta or be a regular attendee in Atlanta. And in a couple years, the distance between the East and the West at the top might not be that different if Florida is able to continue developing.
Yeah, I think privately they think they can win this year. Now, that we're a long ways away. We're more than a month. But that game was 29-15 last year. Jim McElwain told me that if we had made a couple more plays, that would have gotten them nervous, offensively he's talking about. And they controlled tempo, and they played great defense, and we're in it for a half. History will tell if this team's better than that team. It's very, very good. But I think having played them in that setting, I think they'd have a tremendous advantage for themselves, having been there before. I think sitting here right now, they think they can beat Alabama.
I think that there is a very good chance that the offensive numbers, you mentioned that earlier, think about what happened last year on offense with just having to throw out the offense in the middle of the season and then just piece it together with Treon Harris down the stretch. This is the opposite, at least, where you lost Luke Del Rio early. And like you mentioned, Luke Del Rio not going to be the guy that's going to take the top off of a defense. But if he's going to go, if he's going to be that game manager style, that comes with experience. This is a Luke Del Rio, redshirt sophomore, son of a coach, all those great things. The young man's only started seven games of college football, or played in seven games of college football. He is still very much learning.
At Alabama, let's not forget that. And thank God for their sake they have him. I think there's some upside there. Obviously he's got two more years, so. There's room for improvement, but next year he will be pushed. They like this kid, Kyle Trask, who seems to be, I watched practice a little bit this week, as much as we could watch, and they like his arm a lot better. He probably doesn't have a grasp of the offense, but he'll be challenged next year, no doubt.
We are recording this, a mere couple hours away from the release of the first college football playoff rankings, or the beginning of the television program that will end with the release of the first college football playoff rankings.
The pregame show.
Right, right. The Nissan pregame push for the Honda college football playoff rankings. Yeah. There are funny ways, there are jokes that we can tell specifically about whether these first ones matter, in which case I would point out how many teams have been in the top four the middle of the season and not been in the playoff. But there are some things that we learn from each of the college football playoff rankings, Dennis. We expect Florida will be somewhere in there, and I want to, before we talk about the college football playoff selection committee, are you, in particular, because you had a piece on CBS Sports, especially about the makeup of the committee, do you think that this committee understands or is even trying to make statements with the release of its rankings throughout the season. And I say that just like when we are looking at the order of one-loss teams and the order of two-loss teams, do you think that the committee, when it is making its rankings, knows that those data points are as relevant to analysts on the outside as who the top four are? I mean, what is inside the mindset, in your opinion, of this selection committee as it pertains to the midseason rankings?
I don't think they're trying to make statements because, I've been through the mock process.
You've done it, right?
I've done it, and it's very elaborate. It's very drawn out. And look, there's 13 or 12 people involved, and that would take a whole bunch of groupthink for that to happen. They go through seven steps to pick the top 25, which I think is unneeded every week. So, no. I mean, the fact that they know by now they can do anything they want anyway. You know, the fact that in 2014 they dropped TCU from 3 to 6 after TCU won by 52 points, that, you know, and didn't really explain themselves. You know, oh, Ohio State was really good. Yeah, but you had TCU third and they won by 52. I still can't get over that. They don't really have to explain themselves, nor have they. You know, we've gotten these vague 13th data point things, and we're not allowed to speak to the other people anyway. We're just getting it, you know, from, it's almost like the one voice thing with Nick Saban. He doesn't allow the assistants to talk. But I would say in general, no, I think it's really impossible for them to send a message. I think by the time they get done every week, they just want to get home and get back to their families, frankly.
Let
the chips fall where they may. Go ahead.
Well, what is the process? Do they go team by team? Like if we see Ohio State at 5 and Louisville at 6 or 6 and 7, then do we assume that the committee has judged these two resumes side by side, slotted one up and one down?
Yes, because they have that. They can go to that detail. Do we want this team to be 6? Do we want this to be 7? Now, obviously, the most scrutiny is going to be in the top 4, but there is that. Yeah, do we want this team? You know, here's our highest ranked group of 5. Do we want it to be here, or who do we want to be the highest ranked group of 5 based on resume? So there is that discussion. Yes, there is discussion. I would venture to say every week during the process, like they're doing it for the last time. I think they take it seriously. I have no, you know, I'm not going to disparage them. They do a great job. So yeah, there is that, but I think there's that individual discussion, but I don't, if the question is, are they, you know, making a statement by putting Michigan third one week? No, they think that's where Michigan is this week. You know, Oklahoma was in at 4. I guess there was some discussion last year. There was some discussion about whether they would even make it after the last weekend of the season. So, yeah, I think your question is saying at the top, you know, at number 23, that actually, you know, the bottom 5 or 10 is the hardest because the top, you know who those teams are. It's just a case of putting them in there. The bottom is who belongs. I mean, like this week.
And you're sifting between two losses and 3 loss teams, or good 1 losses, or who's got the best 2 or the worst 2 losses. Right. It gets real weird, especially in November.
Yeah. I mean, like right now, do you put in Florida State with 3 losses? Where do you put Washington State, which has won 5 in a row? Second longest, I think second longest winning streak in the country. I'd have to check.
Behind
Alabama, you know, because Boise lost. I think they were in there too. So what do you do with Virginia Tech, which is kind of a hanger on at the end? And that's what, and they've said that that's the hardest, or you know, not the hardest, but that's where the process slows down. The bottom 5.
The current age range of the College Football Playoff Selection Committee is from 43 to 77. We've already had a couple members step down for health reasons. That average age, slightly more than 61, which makes it older than the basketball committee. The basketball committee, to me, Dennis, and maybe you've done that. Have you done that mock selection process?
I did.
Isn't that just one day? I mean, you might get updates.
No, when I did it 10 years ago. So I don't know what it's, I think it is one day today, but we went over 2 days, I want to say, and ended at 1:27 a.m. in the morning.
But this football committee is being tasked with having to fly to Texas every mm-hmm. single week. This is a That's lot right. to ask for, and this was the point that you made on CBS Sports. Is the college football playoff process too taxing, and is this committee too old? At what point yeah. does trying to get the most unbiased, experienced voices in America, shout out Condoleezza Rice,
yep.
You know, at what point does trying to go up the ladder of respect put you in a position where this process might be too much to put on these individuals?
Well, I think my point is that it's all overwrought. The whole 6 week, doing it for 6 weeks in a row, doing the process we just talked about, flying in for 2 days and doing this top 25 that everyone obsesses over. They decided to do that. They didn't have to do that. I can't tell you if ESPN suggested it or pushed it. I think they like it now. It's great programming for them in the middle of a pretty fallow period. But I thought from the beginning, you know, just do it every other week. You know, that way they don't paint themselves into a corner. You know, why'd you do this or why'd you do that? Or at least take a week off from Pick'em Day. In that sense, then you don't paint yourself into a corner. So anything you did 2 weeks before, so much has happened that you can rationalize anything. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, absolutely. They need more flexibility.
Yeah, right. And then you can move teams around without being questioned. But I just think the whole thing is overwrought. And yes, the age, it goes from Kirby Hoka, the chairman, is 43. He's the youngest guy. And the oldest is the old Central Michigan coach, Herb Deromedy, who's 77. None of these people are qualified. But I was shocked that it was older than the basketball committee. That shocked me.
This weekend, we've got LSU in Alabama. It's Tiger Stadium. It is the 8 p.m. SEC on CBS game. Always fun when we get to put Vern and Gary and Allie in primetime. As the sun sets over Tiger Stadium, where a former Tigers coach said opponents' dreams go to die, what are you expecting from the Ed Ogeron-coached LSU Tigers in this matchup?
I think we'll get a heavy dose of Leonard Fournette. I don't think that's a secret.
But will it work? Because there's also been 19 carries for 31 yards. I mean, this is the one team that Fournette needs to get over.
That's right. That's exactly right. And it's at home, so that makes a difference. They're going to have to go. They're going against the best, probably best defensive line in the country. I don't think I'm talking out of turn. To do that, they're going to have to mix in some play action and loosen up that defense. But the difference with Alabama and the reason they'll win is they have one of the best commodities in the country. Any coach would kill for this. Reaching the quarterback with four. Mm. I mean, name the schools that can consistently reach the quarterback with four. And I say that because that figures into your run defense too. If you can reach the quarterback with four, you can certainly stop a running back at the line of scrimmage. That's what they'll have to get past, and I don't know if they can. You know, they just got done facing Trevor Knight. Now they're facing Danny Etling. I think so that's a step down. I think what hurts them, and I was on talked to somebody today about this. You know, Eddie Jackson's out, which is huge.
Yeah.
I don't think it hurts them in the back as much as it does as a game breaker in a punt return, because Nick Saban is a master of those hidden points. And coaching up the special teams, we saw that against Clemson last year. And they won't be as good on punt return. Now, the guys they will slot in there in the back are Hootie Johnson and Ronnie Harrison, who have played a lot because Alabama plays a lot of nickel and dime. So I think they'll be fine there. What worries me is their ability the LSU's ability to loosen them up with the pass, because those receivers are good. And then I guess the hidden points, the non-offensive touchdowns, which they count on, basically.
I totally agree with you. Eddie Jackson has three punt return touchdowns on the season. Like, he is mm-hmm. a big part of the non-offensive touchdown streak. He flips the field when he's not actually scoring touchdowns. And, you know, I think that I would go even a step further, just say returns in general, because Eddie Jackson, just with the ball in his hands in the open field, is one of the most dangerous things that you had in all of college football.
Yeah.
Hate that he went down, no doubt. But NFL player that could change the game, you know, you're basically taking an Alabama team that already had more weapons and just disabled one of them. So
yeah,
the equation changes slightly, but it's still Alabama.
Number one in punt returns in the country. So there you go.
Yeah,
you
know to say that Alabama's too good to move past this is disrespectful to Eddie Jackson.
Yeah, no, right. So I think that's huge. It's not – they're taking away something that other teams don't have. And makes them more equal with LSU in that department.
Elsewhere in the country, Big Ten action. Nebraska coming off its first loss, going to Columbus against Ohio State, trying to maintain a hold in the Big Ten West in the chase for a spot in that Big Ten championship game. Dennis, I was not surprised because I picked Nebraska to cover the number, but I was certainly pleased and taken a little bit off guard with the way Nebraska hung in that game. Caused a lot of, I mean, Alex Hornibrook and Bart Houston are not intimidating anybody, but this Nebraska team stood up and answered the bell in a tough challenge in Madison. You know, what are you seeing from Nebraska right now, and what are you seeing from Nebraska Ohio State this weekend?
I think they catch Ohio State at a good time. Ohio State has now struggled 2 weeks in a row. And this just might be who they are, because it looks like to me that it's a real thing that JT Barrett cannot go downfield. Now, it's easy if they're running the ball and you loosen a defense up, but he doesn't have the arm or the receivers to accurately go downfield. That's just a fact right now. But it takes Nebraska into getting him into those, you know, those behind the chains downs to affect them. I don't think they run the ball as well as Wisconsin, and I think Nebraska is supremely confident. Just having been to Camp Randall and stared down the belly of that beast in a game that, frankly, they should have won. I don't know why they threw into the end zone on that play at the end when all they needed was 8 yards for a first down. That made it an all-or-nothing proposition. So, no, I think I give Nebraska a great shot this week. I did not pick them, but not like you, I picked them with the number.
The Big Ten West, I believe Wisconsin is the best team in that division, but I still realize there's so much football left to be played to feel comfortable. Because, heck, even with the way Northwestern is hanging around, I mean, this is a division that could easily come down to tiebreakers at the end of the season.
Oh, yeah. No, I think so. I mean, any one of about three teams could win it. And you're expecting the Michigan-Ohio State winner in the East. But, no, I think Nebraska could easily win this thing. You know, Penn State already has the upper hand has a big win over Ohio State. So, you know, those three teams, Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan, and then in the West, let's not forget Minnesota, by the way. It was 6-2, and all kinds of speculation that Tracy Clase is going to be fired with a new AD there. How do you get rid of a guy who goes 9-3? I'm just saying, or maybe 10-3.
No,
he really can't.
Oh, absolutely. I said when we were doing the CBS Sports 128, I noticed in compiling the numbers, I'll start to see teams creep up through the rankings. Three teams that are now in the 30s of our CBS Sports 128 and have been moving up, Troy, Tulsa, and Minnesota. 6 wins apiece.
Yeah.
Troy's only loss was to Clemson, and it was a close game. Tulsa, with Phillip Montgomery, has turned things around. They've got some close losses, but they are moving the ball on offense. And then you just mentioned it, Minnesota, just playing winning football. Tracy Clay's winning football, baby.
Defense and special teams, just like Jerry Kill.
They'll
never have the best skill players, but they ugly it up.
All right, a team that will likely be in the top five of the college football playoff rankings that will be released soon, the Washington Huskies. Jake Browning making himself a little bit more of a Heisman contender as well as his totals continue to rack up over the season. They go to Cal this weekend. Then they host a USC team that has been surging behind Sam Darnold. Then they host Arizona State. Then they've got to finish the season in the Apple Cup at Pullman. Dennis, over under 0.5 regular season losses at the end of the season for Washington.
Over under, what's the over under?
Like over or under 0.5. Will they be undefeated or a one loss team?
Oh, going and losses. Regular season losses. I think they'll have one. I can't tell you where it's going to be. I do know that it's pretty easy to see. Mike Leach controls his destiny right now. Look at the schedule. They get Washington at home in the Apple Cup. That rivalry is very volatile in that it can go either way in any given year. It's not, you know, it's not Florida beating Georgia 21 out of 28. It is back and forth. And Washington State is not a pushover. I had them ranked this week, and it's a blood feud. The hate is real, and I would give anything to be at that game on the Friday after Thanksgiving at the end of the month. So I think is dicey for Washington. So I'll take the over on 0.5.
All right. I think USC could get them. That's the one that I've been looking.
That, yeah.
That's because the way this Trojans team has turned around has been a fun story that I would like to see continue. But I root for stories. Coaches root for wins, and all we can root for, Dennis, is for the best possible outcomes to make our life enjoyable.
So we root for chaos. Come on, you know that.
we root for Alabama in the SEC, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yes, we tell our bosses that. We have to do that. speaking of which, I can make a case. You know, the standings debut this week. It's pretty easy for me. Those top four, you know, that we mentioned at the top, or maybe we didn't. Alabama, Clemson, Michigan, and Washington, you know, the four out of the five undefeateds left, I think those are the top four. And I also think all four can absorb a loss in the conference, still win the conference, and all four go to the playoff because the committee is going to favor conference champions. So not only do I think it's really easy right now to pick them, I think their margin of error is pretty large this month, that they could actually lose a game, still win their division in the league, and go to the playoff. That makes sense?
Oh, no, totally. You know, it that's what bucks the idea that a whole bunch would change. But that just might be the reality. You know, every year is going to be different. We've only had 2 years of the college football playoff, and it just might be that, you know, there's only about six or seven deserving teams, and there always have been only about six or seven deserving teams.
Yeah. I mean, Alabama could it could be that the Iron Bowl's meaningless at the end of the month. You know, Auburn could be out of contention. Washington State could be meaningless by that time in terms of division play. And if it's meaningless in division play, unless those other schools have lost twice, it will be virtually meaningless in the playoff race as long as they win their conference championship game. So if we thought there was no drama last year, boy, I don't think there's much this year. I might be missing something. I've seen all those teams. I think it's going to be pretty much what you see this week.
Mm. Well, we will be providing all of the solicited and unsolicited analysis on CBSSports.com. Dennis, enjoy your travel this week. Thanks for checking in from Gainesville, and we will look forward to getting you back next week so we can unpack Alabama, LSU, Florida, Arkansas, and all the great action from across the country. I appreciate it.
All right, that'll be great. Thanks, Chip.